Survivor specialists John and McKenna and sort of Kyle are
back. For now.
For now, yeah. And we are talking Bitter or Better, the First Jurors Impact seasons 6 through 10. We had an amazing discussion last week about seasons 1 through 5. So if you missed that, go on, give that a watch. But we are excited to talk 6 through 10. This is a chunk of seasons that is riddled with coconut chop, and you can clearly see pecking orders, and every person going home gets out within the first round. So it's going to be a time, these few episodes, but I'm excited to get into them because, again, they have varying degrees of the first jurors being in the episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a chunk of, I feel like this is a chunk of seasons where all of these first jurors are rather, with the exception of one, rather visible throughout the pre-merge of their season. So you kind of get a lot of them. You have an idea of their character mm-hmm. going into their boot, except for Rhino, because he just kind of exists on Pearl Islands. But because of that, we have this really good idea of, I think this is a group that we almost get a better idea of how impactful they are to the overall jury than that group we had last time, where, yes, we had a lot of conversation about how those were like the pioneers of how a jury worked and everything like that last week. But this week, I think we really see people kind of their personality coming out a little bit more in how they approach a jury.
Yeah, I think that this sets the tone. You can see more definitively mm-hmm. the jurors in this group setting the tone for their season than the last group. You also see the tone set for returnee seasons in this yeah. group here. Like, this was the first major reality show, to my knowledge, to have an all-star mm-hmm. Season. So before that, you really didn't know how people were going to take it. So here, you sure did.
All right, well, let's get right into it. We're going to talk Amazon, and obviously we have rocket scientist Dave Johnson as our first juror here. And this is a very Dave-centered episode. He goes out with people nagging at him and, like, annoyed by his antics, and you can see why he goes here. He was also blindsided by the Roger boot, and he feels unstable in the rest of his game. And everybody is just like, yeah, we don't need Dave around anymore. He is not the greatest. He's pissing people off because in this episode, he gets to eat again and shower again when he just had that a few episodes ago. So he's rubbing people the wrong way for sure in this episode and, you know, during the merge.
I think this is one of the interesting things about Dave, just as a Survivor player and all, is sometimes I think it's kind of lost because he doesn't act that way, but he was the youngest male on this cast. Mm-hmm. And we obviously get it highlighted earlier on in the season when he goes to the summit with Jenna right before the swap and they like decide the new tribes and everything. Mm-hmm. Which also, I think, really impacts the way that he approaches Final Tribal Council and everything. I think that connection with Jenna is a huge boon for mm-hmm. Jenna going into Final Tribal Council, because despite the fact that Dave goes out so early and isn't on a tribe with Jenna, he still has this like kind of camaraderie with her because of that instance. And I think this episode really highlights how young Dave is. And a lot of this cast was young, but Dave comes off here as someone who was like really had himself together and was kind of working with the older crowd early on in the season. This is where you see him as a 21-year-old almost all the way through.
But yeah. He makes a dock at the beginning of this episode with Butch, but then he's climbing all of these trees and they're just like, you could just chop one on the ground. You don't have to be in the tree and show off and this bravado to, you know, get some wood. It's fine.
Yeah, Dave is very golden boy ish, you know, you know, and he enjoys that role. And this is a cast that really didn't gel with that at all. Mm-hmm. Like Dina and Alex and, you know, Rob Sesternino, even though they were like the same age, you know, this is not a group that is going to appreciate that very much. And like you pointed out, John, Dave is very visible in the pre-merge. As it, you forget it. If you rewatch Amazon, like Dave is actually a very large and memorable character. So yeah, his golden boy antics, you know, really didn't fit with this group at all.
He also, for the reward challenge, when he wins, he takes Dina based on a number behind his back. He's like, all right, Dina, Alex, I have a one or two behind my back. Someone pick a number. And Dina picked the correct number, and that's who won. But he's also now alienating everybody else and saying, I'm either going with Dina or Alex, but I can't choose, so they must. And it's just like, you're just throwing it out there like that. Why can't they all just pick a number? You know, like, why does it have to be Dina or Alex? Why can't you just pick whomever is best for your game to take to that point, which might be Dina, but like, you just got to make a decision here.
This is something that I think people in their heads, this is a good idea to just like pick randomly, but like we see it in 40 seasons later, Maria have them do rock, paper, scissors, and it is not appreciated. So this is never a good decision.
I think Dave is going the right way about this from a strategic standpoint at this point, because Dina and Alex were not on his swap tribe. And those are definitely the people he needs to make inroads with in order to survive. Because remember, he's coming off of being blindsided in the Butch vote, too. Or the Roger vote. The Roger vote, sorry.
Roger. Yeah.
Sometimes old white men get confused in my head. off the Roger boot, he was blindsided in that. So he is kind of in desperation mode at this point in the game. So I think he is really trying to make inroads here. Is this the best way to do it? No. McKenna and I have gone on record many times saying how stupid it is to randomly select people to go on reward. It kind of defeats the purpose of having to pick people to go on reward.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this all really shows how he ends up going towards the end game as a juror as well, though, because throughout the entire game, we're kind of given this idea that Dave, I mean, it's not really emphasized, but Dave is a rocket scientist. He is a very intelligent man, and it does come across that he's intelligent. He's strategic. He's thinking things through, right? Like, if you look, again, going back to the swap, who's the first person he takes off the board? Oh, Jenna said her and Heidi were super close. Heidi's coming with me, right? Like, separate that immediately. So it does go to show that he was really thinking about the game here. I think what kind of undoes Dave is actually the fact that he's dealing with some of the best strategists we've seen in the game so far.
I mean, yeah, Rob points out in this episode, this isn't necessarily strategy. So I think some of this boot is based on maybe some personal issues, but Rob is jealous that Heidi is using Dave and sleeping next to Dave and cuddling Dave, and he wants her to himself. So there's a little bit of that thrown into the episode as well, which I thought was hilarious, that, you know, this is why you're choosing to vote Dave off. Like, he is maybe a potential number that Heidi could bring in for some reason. They don't need him, but like, he could be a number that Heidi's using, because we clearly see Heidi saying, I'm using Dave. Like, I'm not, there's nothing going on here.
This is kind of, oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
This is kind of similar to Richard voting off Greg as the first juror. Mm-hmm. In a way where it's like, I'm going to pick the most charismatic, right? The most, I don't know if Dave was the most likable because he wasn't fitting in with this group necessarily, right? But like, you know, he's a provider. He seems like someone who could be good at this, and he is somewhat strategic. So let me send a message and put this person on the jury first.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. And I think like the Rob Sesternino, you know, confessional there is just the edit playing into like the MTV list that is Survivor Amazon, because this is a very horny season for... You know, as a 2003 reality TV show, there's nothing else really going on. But I think you're exactly right, Kyle. This is a move against the largest threat to
his own game.
This video. Like the opposition, right?
Yeah.
This is someone who's like, okay, people might not be getting along with Dave now, but that doesn't mean they won't be getting along with Dave later. And you have to strike while the iron's hot sometimes.
And with all of this Dave talk throughout the episode, right at that last little end bit, we get, but what about Matthew? He's kind of been like a side name of like, well, if Dave wins immunity, we go Matthew. So like he's been around in some of the conversations, but it's definitely very Dave focused. And so when we get to the coconut chop immunity challenge, Dave is actually out second, but it's the same round as Matthew, who was out first. And Matthew actually gives Dave that final chop. What I've noticed in some of the coconut chop episodes, like the people on the bottom are also chopping themselves. They're not like trying to get each other further. So Dave also, like, you can tell he's out first, Matthew's out first. His only shot is to try and see if Matthew's the one to go here. And he's using Dina at the reward to maybe see if that is the way it can go. But unfortunately, it doesn't. And Tribal Council is basically all centered around Matthew. So the episode is really trying to, quote, pull one over on us that it's not Dave, but it's a failed attempt at trying to give us like this Matthew seed.
That's the entire season, though. Like, the entire season just paints Matthew as the scapegoat, like the backup vote for every single vote moving forward. It does get a little tiresome, but it's not quite tiresome at this point. And there's a question as to whether or not Dave would go here, but I think seeing this fight from Dave is really important for him being a final juror as well. And I think it really does show that he's thinking about the game. And again, like, that's what's so much more important for Dave as a first juror than the five that we talked about last week, right? Like, John Carroll's probably the closest comparable, I think, to Dave from that last group there. Maybe Greg, but he just approaches the game in a way where he is still fighting and still going and never going to give up. And I think that's really important, because I think even when put onto the jury, he still takes his role in the game incredibly seriously.
Yeah, I mean, he talked about in his like little jury speak segment, he wants them to give them an intelligent answer and see if they start talking out of their asses after that. And his final tribal council question, and it is the last question that we are shown. What modern influential leader have you emulated during this game, and what qualities from that individual have you shown best? So he's looking for these like textbook, you know, encyclopedia, big brain answers. But within that, he's showing game savviness and game awareness of like, I want you to think about your answer. I don't want you to just spew nonsense. Yes, exactly. Matthew's answer of Colin Powell. And hilarious then Jenna answers her mom.
Okay. So I think these answers are actually really important for seeing how Dave approaches this final tribal council here. Because Dave ends up voting for Jenna, and Jenna doesn't answer his question.
But I like the way that she did answer it. It's like, I'm not trying to ever emulate someone I'm not, like, I can't hang out with, I can't touch, I can't, you know, I'm not in their space, so how can I, like, emulate someone I don't know? And so the fact that she said, all right, I emulate my mom. We have the whole mom storyline throughout the entire season. So it does have that little bit of heartstring pull, but at the same time, she justifies why she's dancing around his question. And in that, I think is an intelligent answer.
Yeah, but she didn't answer his question.
But she did.
She found a way to answer his question, I think, is more what it comes down to. But she's not actually addressing the council. Whereas, like, I think this was a question that was designed for Matt to kind of show up above Jenna here. But Dave still ends up voting for Jenna in the end anyways.
Yeah, I mean, she could have answered the question and BS'd it, which is exactly mm-hmm. what he didn't want. Yep. You know, as like a 22-year-old, 21-year-old, how many, you know,
rocket scientists,
political figures do you know? Well, about Jenna, like, oh, yeah, you know, Matthew definitely is probably, you know, just I know I didn't keep up with this when I was 21, 22. So
I had to look up who Colin Powell was now because I wasn't sure who he was. But I'm also Canadian.
Yeah, so you're also Canadian. So that, right? Yeah. This is also interesting that this is the last question. Not really sure why that was. Like, I think, I don't know, Christy would have been a better person to end on. Like,
yeah, maybe it was because Jenna went second and it's the mom of it all.
Maybe. Yeah, that's a good point.
But the mom storyline wasn't even as prevalent in Amazon as you might think, because it doesn't really get mentioned until the Letters from Home episode, which I think is the episode after this.
Mm.
No, the episode after this is Adina. So it's two episodes after the merge, or after the Alex boot. So it would be the Alex boot.
Okay.
So, and it gets mentioned there by Heidi, not Jenna. But I do think it does put a cap on Jenna and kind of shows how she's winning the game. And I think that is the important thing here, because this is a very different win than any of the other wins we've seen preceding it. And I think Dave does play a part in helping to determine that.
Mm-hmm. So, do we think Dave is bitter or better for the game?
I think he's better. I think for sure. He doesn't come off as bitter at all. Like you've mentioned, he takes the game seriously, right? Mm-hmm. Like he wants to vote for who he thinks is the best. He voted, well, like you said, he kind of set this question up for Matthew. So he's trying to prop Matthew up, you know, ended up not voting for him. But I think he was there to support and look for actually who is the best, and not, he wasn't bitter at all.
And I think a lot of it comes down to the multifacets of the game too when Dave is there. I also think he's a better juror because he is really looking at the fact that there is a social game to be played here. And I think Jenna gets discredited a lot for her win because, mm-hmm. yes, she ties the immunity record win for women, but it's through things like shuffleboard and answering questions and things like that. But I think that there is a lot of respect for Jenna's game from Dave here. And it would have been very easy for Dave to come in, just like push the boys' strong narrative, right?
Yeah.
And get the vote on the boys, which is what the fear was and why Roger goes prior to Dave.
Well, speaking of Roger, because he's the merge boot, and in other seasons, the merge boot is the first juror. So what would have happened if Roger was the first juror? Well, Matthew just gets one extra vote, and I think we call it a day. But do you guys
know if that's true?
No.
I don't know if that's true. I think Roger could have spent enough time with the likes of Dave and Alex to kind of push them closer to voting for Matthew.
So then what would that make it? It would be three Matthew and the rest Jenna?
That would be That would be four Matthew of all the boys. If all the boys other than Sester Nino vote for Matthew, that's four.
Yeah, I think that Dave could have been a Matthew vote for sure.
Yeah. So I actually think it is actually quite important that they got out Roger there. And I think there was a lot of method to that madness of getting Roger out prior to the jury. Mm-hmm. Because I actually do think that is someone who, even if they would, because I think once you take Roger out of the situation where he's at camp, kind of bossing people around and stuff, and you're just in Ponderosa, I think he becomes a little bit more satiable and he's a little easier to just more digestible and easier to talk to. And I think he would have a lot more influence in that sense than he would at camp when everyone's really annoyed at him.
Mm-hmm. Christy could have been a Matthew vote also. She was on the fence. As it is, so.
And then if you have someone who's pushing for, oh, hey, we should vote for Matthew, that could really have, I think it could have been very influential to the outcome of the season.
Imagine us talking about Matthew as the winner of Amazon. Crazy. Just by a small Roger vote. Hey. All right, we are going to move on to Pearl Island, and we get Rhino. We'll be here for about 5 minutes and then moving on to
this won't be
for
long.
About 25 minutes. So Rhino is obviously upset that Savage left, and his whole MO this episode is to talk to Burton, see if he can get him, Burton and Lil, to flip to him, T, and Dara, because they're obviously on the bottom of Drake. You would be solid with us. We can make moves throughout the game if you just flip over to us. But obviously, Lil would never in her days switch back over to Morgan because of what they did to her on Morgan. So really, like, Rhino is fighting up a hill, and he can't unfortunately get it done, but he has a good fight for the game and isn't going down just because, all right, Savage went first, I'm next. He really does try his best to maneuver throughout the game to get those swing people over to him to, you know, keep himself in the game one more day.
Yeah, it's really the only argument that he can make, you know, so good on him for making it. Couldn't get it done, probably was never going to happen. But this was the person that we really didn't get a lot of this group of first jurors. Mm-hmm. This is definitely the person that we knew the least throughout the game. So what are you going to say, John?
I agree. I 100% agree. Yeah. But I think, like, there's a little bit more influence he has on this jury than you might think. And I think a lot of it actually stems from Andrew Savage. And Andrew Savage tweeted yesterday that there was no way Outcast was winning over a non-Outcast on this season.
That's crazy and timely.
Yes.
He's been active on Twitter lately.
He's been really active on Twitter lately. But I think that is something we have to keep in mind. Is like, Ryan and Savage were really close on this entire
game. Lockstep.
Right? Lockstep the entire game from day one. They dropped their pants together in the first challenge in solidarity, right? Like, they were lockstep the entire game. And they were a big driving point of Outcast can't win this season. There is no way, right? So mm-hmm. I actually do think Rhino actually plays a pivotal role here. Not that I think, like, Will could have beaten Sandra anyways. I don't think there was any chance outside of the whole Outcast of it all.
More votes, though, than just the one.
Yeah. But I do think his influence on this, though we don't see it as much, is still felt in this jury. And yeah. He's kind of put in one of the hardest spots here, because with Savage going, even if he's able to convince Burton to come over to them, he's still at a 5-4 disadvantage here. He is kind of like this dead man walking in this episode
mm-hmm.
and when he gets voted out. And because of that, it's really interesting seeing him go into Final Tribal Council and how he ends up voting. I just don't know how much it's like the Outcast of it all is why he puts his vote on Sandra versus he actually thinks Sandra's the deserving one.
He, Rupert calls him one of the quote leaders of the week. And during the coconut chop challenge, Rhino takes 4 chops in round 1 and then he gets his 5th and final one and he's the first out of round 2. And he's just like, he is the first one out completely. So like, he's the first juror, also like number one target of the coconut chop. And it's going to be interesting as I go through some of these, you know, merge episodes to see, or sorry, first juror episodes, to see if how many of these are coconut chop and how much that potentially could impact the game, because it was clear with Marquesas that mm-hmm. impact the game, and these two in Amazon and Pearl Islands, the writing was kind of on the wall for the two of them, so it didn't impact as much.
I think it's really important that we get the chops here, though, because I think this really goes to show, I think one thing that people don't consider about these coconut chops is how much, yes, okay, alliances can kind of dominate the coconut chops, and, you know, they can be gamed, as we saw later on in San Juan del Sur, but I think it also is really important that these people who are losing these coconut chops, and becoming first years just have bad social games. Right? Like, that's what we have to, like, their social game isn't as strong as those around them. That's why they're getting chopped first.
Yeah. True.
Yeah. It is interesting with these early episodes. And now once we get into the later seasons, our first juror is the merge boot. Right. But in the earlier seasons, this is the second merge vote. So the lines have already been drawn. Yeah. So this is, you could argue, one of the least interesting episodes of this, the first few seasons, right? The second juror, it's pretty straightforward. Who's going home here. And especially when we do the coconut chop challenges, like the outcome is foreshown so much earlier. And it kind of gives these people a little bit of time to like stew in the game. You know what I mean? Like you could be betrayed at the merge, but then you're going to Ponderosa, right? You get some time. You're on the jury. Now it's like you've been betrayed and you have 3 days with these people still in the game to try and to like seethe at them.
Yeah.
So I think maybe that little bit of time there makes a difference.
What I also love about Rhino is in his like jury speaks segment here in this episode, he says, "I don't feel good about the power because it is a lot of pressure to give someone $1 million. And I want to give it to someone who deserves it because it is a huge deal and can change someone's life." So I love that he is really like grappling with the severity of this decision and how this can change someone's life completely. And he's not taking it for granted. He's not, you know, spoiler, I'm going to say better. He's not taking this bitterly. He's really focused on like who deserves this $1 million.
Yeah. And that is much better. I do think that he is bitter in a way, like we talked about with the outcast thing. Yes. I do think that you asked that question, John, is that a part of it? I think it is a huge part of it. Like in Savage, he's not on the jury, but Rhino is like the Savage conduit in that he is an extension of Savage who is bringing that. Question. Yeah, exactly. Is it fair? Now, you would be shocked if someone nowadays was in the game for 29 days because it's over after 26 days. So yeah, that would be super impressive. But I think it is fair, especially now. It was like a surprise twist. You know, it was someone that you didn't really like and is now here. They voted you out. And so I understand why you would be upset about that as a juror. Like, it doesn't even really matter who it is. I think Lil, with her personality, people didn't really, you know, like that very much. The whining, the sad face, you know, that wasn't ingratiating people. But I think even if Burton had made it to the end or whoever, like, they weren't going to get a lot of votes because especially the Morgans who got really screwed over by this twist.
Yes. And actually it was a question of whether or not Burton could have beaten Sandra or Fairplay at the end. That prompted Savage's response on Twitter
yesterday. Fairplay potentially because they might just not like
Fairplay. Savage said there is no way. That's because there is no way Burton could even beat Fairplay.
So, in his final tribal question, though, he basically is like, all right, being out of the game, Lil, for 10 days, is it fair for me to give you the money over Sandra, who is in the game the whole time? But his question then to Sandra differs of, you've always been honest with me, but do you think you rode coattails the entire time? And was there a person you used to progress in the game? So these are a little bit more like jaded questions, but sometimes, as John knows, the jurors are bitter for the drama of it, not necessarily in practice for what they're voting. So I think Rhino is asking the harder questions, but not necessarily meaning them bitterly.
I don't, these questions don't come off as bitter to me. If you're being bitter, I think this is another instance of like Danny McRae in 41, right? You're not being bitter at the castaway for playing the game, right? Mm-hmm. You're being bitter at production for screwing you over.
Twist is not on trial.
Yeah, exactly. but instead, I think these questions are, I think this is a genuine question. Like, is it fair?
Yeah.
And you have to be able to answer yes and justify it, I think, in this instance, if you're Lil, in order to stand any chance of winning the game. I actually think this is a fantastic question to ask here. And I think someone who could argue their way through that could convince people that it would be fair to vote out one, or to give the $1 million to
an outcast. 31 seasons?
Yeah, exactly.
You can hear more of John's thoughts about that in 6 days.
During that whole time you were talking, I was like, what is the math of 7 to 38?
And then on top of that, I think his question to Sandra also really goes to show how well Sandra plays the game. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, like, despite the fact that we are shown Sandra in confrontation with Fairplay so much in this season, she's actually, like, very personable and has a very good social game with everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is kind of under edited and a little underappreciated how good of a social game Sandra plays. And I think this is, again, he's essentially asking the same question here to both of them. It's just worded differently, because it's like, is it fair for me to give it to you, Lil, because you were out of the game for 10 days? And is it fair for me to give you the prize, Sandra, if someone else helped you get here?
It's interesting. Doesn't she answer Rupert?
Yes.
Which is funny because Rupert got eighth place. So there were several rounds where Sandra was on her own. I also think Rhino was riding Savage's coattails, so that was a funny question for him to ask. But I think that this is good that he was the first question as mm-hmm. well, because him asking about Lil is the question that everybody has on their minds, like especially the audience. The audience is thinking, well, Lil got voted out, so how is the jury going to react to that? So him coming up and answering that first gives you that insight into how he and probably the rest of the jury feels about Lil. Like, they're not willing to give this to her. And if they are, she's going to really have to earn it and deserve it and explain it here. And it also sets Sandra up to where you set right off the bat, like, this is how I played my game. Right. And then you have all of that going through the rest of the tribal council.
I also, while we're on that, like, Lil plays a lot better of a game than people give her credit for.
Oh, absolutely. She plays the best game she can really play.
Absolutely. She kind of does what Cesternino was doing in Amazon, going back and forth between everything. So I think this is actually that is what she does. She goes between these alliances back and forth the entire time in the post-merge. The problem is Cesternino's doing it with conviction and Lil is doing it with, like, regret the entire time. That is the difference.
And she was voted out.
It's just crazy to put those two just equal with each other. Of, like, they play the same. Similar game.
It's true. She is contradictory because she's wearing the Boy Scout uniform. She's preaching. She's preaching that, you know, she's trying to be like the honest person. Yeah. Like she said, she's regretful. So it's like the intent was different. The not owning your game is mm-hmm. different. So
and again, that's why I just think Rhino's question is actually, like, surprisingly more important and impactful than you might think from this person who we barely see throughout the entire season.
Well, all right, Savage, he's now the first member of your jury. Bitter, first of all, but yes. Second, what could have changed? Probably not much.
Sweep for Sandra.
He is Sandra not gets letting, the first perfect game.
He is not letting Tawana vote for.
Yeah,
for,
that I think 100%.
We get, I think we get a more cutting, a more Sue Hawkeyan speech in this council. But that would get Sandra to sweep, be the first jury sweep.
Probably.
No, be the first perfect game.
Yeah, it would
doesn't be the first get a vote
perfect
at all.
Game. She doesn't get a vote. She doesn't, like, the only thing preventing her from a perfect game is Tijuana's vote.
Here's a random fun fact real quick. Sandra does not get a vote until her 21st tribal council.
There you go.
Final six.
Keep Kyle around, guys.
All right. Now, moving on to Lex. What could we say about Lex? Man, this is, you know, I think the epitome of the bitter juror. You have one that you have to say, this is the better juror and this is the bitter juror, not in 10 out of 10, I am going with, here's my bitter example, and it's Lex. And he basically, Rob does the same thing to him as he does to Ethan, but because it's done to him, he doesn't like it. Mm-hmm. And so Rob tries to promise that he could do and try and save him, make a new alliance, and he cannot. So Lex goes here as the first juror. Rob can't save him. He is upset because he decided to save Amber over Jerry. And it's just a whole big mess.
In Backtrack by Mark Cameron, the past is prologue for a violent criminal with three names, Ricky Lee Pink. Pink has been rotting in jail for years, plotting revenge against the man who thwarted his almost perfect theft of $5 million in diamonds. That man, Wayne Cutter, is deceased, but his grandson, Arliss, is very much alive, for now. Pink and Cutter are about to collide in a violent confrontation on a floating city in the middle of the water, a massive cruise ship traveling around Alaska's Inside Passage. An experienced U.S. Marshal, Arliss must move fast but cautiously, or he may be the last of the Cutter family tree. As Survivor fans, it's not just the strategy and social dynamics that keep us enthralled. It's also the idea of man versus wild. This concept is at the heart of all Mark Cameron's novels, and it's especially prevalent in Backtrack. It's one of the main reasons I enjoyed this book, and as listeners of The Specialists, I know you will too. If you're an outdoor enthusiast, fan of wilderness thrillers by authors C.J. Box and William Kent Kruger, or just love a fast-paced action thriller from the likes of Brad Thor or Jack Carr, make sure to pick up your copy of Backtrack today. An Alaskan resident and Texas native with nearly 30 years in law enforcement, Cameron is a master of action and gritty detail. He brings explosive authenticity to Backtrack as U.S. Marshal Arliss Cutter's manhunt will employ all his skills and knowledge as a member of the U.S. Marshal's Service. Backtrack by Mark Cameron is available now wherever books are sold.
Lex is the epitome of the bitter juror. When you say bitter juror, he is the first person that comes to mind. I don't even know where to start with this, because you're right. He does do the same thing to Ethan. Now, I don't know if he and Ethan had a deal before the game. I know he and Rob definitely had a deal before the game, but you would expect mm-hmm. that Lex would want to keep his friend around. So but through that, you can see what type of game Lex is playing, mm-hmm. right? Like he's like all about his word, even though, yeah, he probably didn't keep his word to Ethan, but he's like very, very serious about his deal with Rob here. And I've always wondered why Rob does not vote for Shiann here. Someone explain this to me?
Because it was interesting with these pockets that Amber and Rob were talking about. They have two-person alliances everywhere. So they have a two-person alliance with Jenna and Rupert. They have the same with Alicia and Big Tom. And then mm-hmm. they have one with Lex and Kathy. But yeah, you're right. Shiann is here. Make Shiann the first member of the jury. But Lex has too much maybe of an influence, or could be too much of a big game player. And maybe they wanted to prove to the Shapira people of like, I don't care about my relationship with Lex. I'm with you guys. Like, is it a mm-hmm. show of loyalty to the game alliances? I don't know. But Shiann would be a perfect option right here.
Feels like the perfect option. So
Lex is the only option for Rob here.
You think so?
He's the only one that can really go against him right now in strategy.
He could pull back Big Tom.
Lex pulls back Big Tom, and that pulls in too much, and it gives all the power to, like, Rob has gone on and explained this, and even Lex has said this, that if Lex survived this vote, Lex probably makes it to the end of this game. Because he just gains complete control of it.
Mm-hmm. And then they could pull over Jenna and Rupert, potentially. Exactly.
So being able to pull in Big Tom is actually such a huge swing here for Lex, that Lex is the right decision for Rob to get out here. But what it does is it puts him into an unwinnable situation. Now, the interesting thing is he still wins because he ends up marrying the person who wins the season anyways and being on the show again 3.5 more times and having an illustrious career and having his wedding televised and on The Amazing Race for multiple seasons. And being one of the most prolific members in all of reality TV. But this is so fascinating because now all of a sudden, outside of the game is influencing the game. And now, granted, you could argue outside the game was already impacting the game just because of like personal biases and things like that. However, this is a personal relationship from outside of the game. Like you said, Kyle, this is the first major all-returning cast in reality TV history. I think at this point, the Real World versus Road Rules has already started. Which has like starting this formula, but this is the first time you've seen people from the same show come in and play the game again.
And like, especially and
it's not in the same cast of, every season.
and also especially in an era of like, we didn't know this was going to happen again. So we made a bunch of friends in this community so we can talk to them because they have shared experiences. And so now we're going to put all of these friends on an island together and ask someone as a friend to do me a solid and keep my girl around and then get the betrayal backhand at them.
Yeah.
So it's rough because this whole episode is talking about, you know, these personal relationships coming into the game. Mm-hmm. And Rob really is a proponent of like, personally, I love you still. You are a great friend to me, but I wanted to win money. I'm sorry that you are taking it as a knock to our friendship. Mm-hmm. But it's really a compliment to you that you are so threatening. I had to make this move in the game. And Lex is blinded from that strategy. Plus, he also left with the hurt from Kathy this episode because Kathy basically is like, I don't want to be here if you're not here, Lex. Mm-hmm. You have a better shot at breaking open this game than I do. I'm going to give you my immunity. And then she doesn't. And the face Lex makes. Now, I don't know if they spliced that from when he was reading the votes or not.
And like
names come up, but it's still just beautiful of like, I'm going to keep my immunity.
I think a lot of this comes to what do you value in a winner? And I think what All Stars really does, and what Lex actually really does show as a first year, is
and a merge boot,
which is the first time we've had that. But that granted, the merge also happens at 9 in this season, because they wanted to do the funky tribe swap at 10.
Yeah.
But what we really see happening here is our first instance of game doesn't have to determine a winner.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. Like, and despite the fact that, yes, there is a game move in here, it is not the only thing impacting a winner. And this is, again, one of those big evolutions in Survivor moment, right? Because I think it's really important that, like, Kathy still votes for Rob in Final Tribal Council. Lex does not. Lex is very bitter. Alicia's very bitter. Tom's very bitter.
Lex's final words were basically, I'm sad, but I'm rooting for Big Tom.
This is like one of the first jurors who's like, I'm voting against somebody.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like not really voting for somebody. Like we saw that with Sue Hawk in season one, but Sue Hawk wasn't like she said, I think she was probably more bitter against Kelly, but she was not the first juror. Lex here is the first juror. And you want to talk about setting a tone.
Yes.
I mean, my goodness. Like his jury speech is one of the best. Like All Stars has never been a favorite season of mine. I think it's maybe last for me. But the Final Tribal might be my favorite because you really get to see these emotions on display. And Lex is right that life blurs into the game all the time. Like it really, even for the most like hardcore strategic people, it just does. And especially on the first returnee season when you don't know that your actual real life friends are going to betray you. That trend wasn't set yet. Everybody comes into the game now knowing that. But here, there was no precedent that had happened before. So I think, you know, he definitely gets he sets the tone. Big Tom, he gets Big Tom. I don't know. Like, I know Big Tom was bitter, but definitely having Lex there as the first juror, you know, probably influenced that a lot.
I think there are a lot of people who are probably influenced by Lex.
She,
I don't think so. Shean's the only one who I think was always voting for Amber.
Which is so crazy to me because she thought Amber was like controlling everything the whole time. Which she was alongside Rob, but from what I understand, she was voting for Amber because she thought she was controlling Rob.
Well, I think she also I think Shean also just looks at that as a, this is a viable strategy to leech onto someone who is going to run the game, right? Mm-hmm. Is how I've always interpreted Shean's vote more. But I think like Tom, Alicia, and Lex are the three votes for Amber here, right?
For Rob.
No, yeah. Against Rob.
Sorry, against Rob. Yeah.
Like in conjunction with Shean's vote, like those are the three vote for Rob.
But Lex, Shean is actually a vote for Amber. The others are just against Rob. Yeah, yeah.
Lex being the first person there to stew on the entire thing, joined by Kathy, who does vote for Rob, but is also kind of stewing over the betrayal and everything. Mm-hmm. As soon as Alicia gets there, she's also going to be poisoned by it. Even though she was already feeling betrayed going out, there is now multiple days before there's any other conversation other than the fact about how much they hate Rob.
And also in Lex's speech, he says the true measure of a man is his friendship. If you're talking about like that is like your bar of how a man is and how he treats his friends, and you were one of his friends, like that really like, you know, puts you down in the gutter. But then he goes and says, as far as the game goes, you beat me fair and square, and I'll congratulate whomever wins. But also, you guys suck as friends. And it's like, you just separated winning and friendship, just like they did. Like, Lex is also contradicting himself throughout the entire thing. And I'm pretty sure Ethan was probably like, Lex, homeboy, please, you know, save me this one time. And Lex is like, I can't, I'm sorry. Which is the same thing that Lex went to Rob about, and Rob was like, I can't, I'm sorry. And they both knew that they were going home before the tribal council even happened.
Yeah, this is what makes Survivor the greatest social experiment. It really is, because it's like you get exposed. You expose these human hypocrisies, because I understand Lex. I understand where he's coming from. It's like, I want to play the game, but I'm also pissed when I lose. So it's like, it's so true. It's also ironic, though, that Lex, who created one of the first like really bitter jurors in Kelly, who we talked about last week, is now himself the most bitter first juror that there ever was and ever will be. So
I think it comes around to why he was the way he was. I think it's very similar to how he was in Africa, though, right? Where I think Lex believed he had developed a winning strategy for an all-star season. I think that's what it really comes down to, is Lex is, hurt from the friendship aspect of it. I think he also just hurts from being bested. Because Lex feels like the type of guy who, he says he'll congratulate the winner, but I think he would always think it should have been me.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think he goes into all-stars being like, I have this fantastic pregame alliance that'll totally carry me through this game and get me to the end.
Mm-hmm.
And then that strategy, which, you know, again, it's a first time strategy.
By a girl in a bikini.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, is like, this is essentially the next step of what Hatch does in Borneo, right? Hatch goes into Borneo, creates an alliance. That's a huge thing. Lex goes into All-Stars creating a pregame alliance. That should carry you through the game. Except for the fact that it didn't account for the fact that Survivor is a fluid game where you have to be flexible.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Kyle.
Here's another thing, is that you're right. He spent a lot of time on this like pregame. And I think this is, and we've said it a bunch, since this was the first All-Star season, you saw a lot of things that you had never seen before. So, and the players were experiencing these things as well. So like, when you were voted off Survivor, you never think you're going to get a chance to play again. Now you find out you do get a chance to play again. So you spend all this time, for him, it was only like 2 years, but for some people, they spend years thinking about it and planning it and thinking about what it's going to be like. And it doesn't happen for most of them, right? And you said he thought he had this all figured out. He probably did. And he comes in thinking that this is great. And in the pre-merge, you know, you get the winners voted out. You get two quits. Rob Cesternino was probably the only one who like was like, you know, real devastated by it. But he wasn't on the jury. Lex is like the first person to really taste what it's like. Yeah. To have this plan, this idea in your head, this fantasy, mm-hmm. and have it crushed. And you have to watch him on the jury every week and see him in his reaction and see the kind of seethingness grow. And so I think that that is a real factor here. Like it's an interesting aspect to this.
Yeah.
I think it's also very easy to spread ill will more than goodwill.
Oh yeah.
I think that is like that toxic behavior from Lex and that toxicity that he has towards Rob is easily infectious. And I think that's why as we continue through this series, I wouldn't be surprised if we start saying the bitter first jurors tend to have more impact on the game than the better first jurors.
Mm. Probably.
Well, I'm sure we could talk about Lex for yeah. so many more hours, but we are going to move on to Vanuatu, and Sarge is our first juror here. And after watching this episode, I will never discredit Chris's win. I think it is, I am in agreement with the specialist mafia here of Chris plays one of the best winning games. But this entire episode is why Twyla lost Sarge's vote, not mm-hmm. how Chris won Sarge's vote or anything of that matter of like, oh, the Boys Alliance, blah, blah, blah. This was so focused around Twyla flipping on Sarge and like Julie getting in Twyla's head and everything like that with the Rory vote. And it didn't really highlight much of Chris and Sarge together, just like we're on a sinking ship, let's try and find some votes and maybe boot Eliza or something like that because there's an issue there. So this vote specifically is why Sarge doesn't vote for Twyla.
Absolutely. I mean, or maybe the previous vote, right? Where that betrayal happens. But mm-hmm. like I said, now Sarge gets to stay in the game and stew with these women. And they're yeah. one of the funniest shots in Survivor history is when Scout is singing at the fire and then it pans over to Sarge just staring daggers. And just
I thought that scene was wild.
It's
I was
so funny.
What is going on here?
And that's and Scout knows what she's doing. Like it's so funny. But you're right that this is more about Twyla losing the vote. And what's interesting is that Chris in his voting confessional says, Sarge, this is a vote for you, not against you. Right. He mm-hmm. says that when he's voting for Sarge. As in a way to like get your vote, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think that there was a chance in a world, if the game had gone differently, that Sarge would vote for Twyla over Chris.
I think if Twyla bested him at the final five situation yeah. or final four, Twyla and Sarge could have gotten a lot closer than Chris and Sarge because it felt like they were also in lockstep together, mm-hmm. that they were real, you know, making these real connections and these friendships. And I could see Sarge even here voting for Twyla, but the way that she did him dirty because she didn't go back and check, hey, Julie said this to me. Did you also promise her four? And you can easily tell with Sarge, he's not going to BS Twyla and be like, mm-hmm. no, I didn't do the, you can tell when he says no, he means no. Mm-hmm. So the fact that she never went back and checked with Sarge just really hurt him, that she believed Julie's word over his. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a man's word is his bond, his loyalty. So the fact that she didn't believe him in it.
I'm going to push back on this here. I don't think this is Sarge losing Twyla's vote. I don't think Twyla ever had Sarge's vote. And I think a lot of it comes down to the fact that, and this is something that we've mentioned previously, we mentioned it last week, part of winning the game of Survivor is knowing your jury. Mm-hmm. And this was an instance of Twyla not understanding how something would impact Sarge, but Chris completely understanding it.
Yeah.
I think Chris, what makes Chris's winning game so impressive is his jury management skills.
Mm-hmm.
And the best.
Yeah, it's easily one of the best jury management skill games ever. And because of that, I think what we see in Sarge, Chris has already worked with Sarge. Chris knows exactly what to do with Sarge. Chris knows not to make false promises to Sarge. Twyla doesn't figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I think that's what it comes down to is, Sarge really emphasizes, it's a buzzword in the Survivor community now,
honor and integrity.
Honor and integrity.
Yeah.
and that's the thing. It's like, this is an old school season. There's a lot of pushing for honor and integrity here. And Sarge is kind of the perfect example of someone who would push for that. And that's where I think he sees the difference in Chris and Twyla's game. Yes, there's the whole Twyla swearing on her son aspect of it and everything, and being like incredibly offended by that. I still will never understand the gravitas of doing that. However, and then Twyla says it's a mistake, right? Because she thinks that's what Sarge wants to hear. I don't think that's what Sarge wanted to hear here. I think this is kind of like, this feels more like a Tony Trist situation in Kageyan, right?
We just talked about that the other day.
Yeah, Kyle and I were helping Andrew Denson discuss Kageyan the other day on Mucky's channel there, and yeah, I think this is Sarge actually wanting her to own the move.
Yeah.
Rather than cowering to the move.
Yeah, she doesn't own her game much. And like you said, she believes Julie's word over Sarge's. Mm-hmm. And I think it's like what we talked about with Lil, whereas if like her intent was different, where it's like, oh, I'm like doing this for strategic reasons, or I'm more assured of myself and this is what I'm doing. And if Twyla was like, Sarge, I voted you out because like you're the best ever, right? Yeah. Like, not because like I kind of got played or I believe somebody else's word over yours, right? Like, he's not gonna like that. No. So I think being more honest, and Chris knows how to tailor his response to each member of the jury.
Oh my gosh. He's like, yeah, we're gonna go grab a beer, Sarge. No matter how you vote, we're still grabbing that beer.
Perfect. And Twyla was not that.
This is true. And he does emphasize, like, in his final words of like, I never jeopardized my word, my character, or my name. Good luck. I don't want to be there while you tear each other's heads off. And then also enforces that in Final Tribal Council of like, he holds true to his beliefs of loyalty, duty, respect, honor, and would never want to see her again, have any contact. Like, he does that whole, you know, speech for her, and then just goes over to Chris and asks him where their friendship stands. And that's like the softball of like, hey, Chris, you know, I'm voting for you. Yeah. You want to just hit this out of the park? Okay, thanks. And Sarge is second to last in the viewing order for Final Tribal Council questions. So, like, this is, like, one of the last things we see.
Mm-hmm. I think it really just goes to show that, like, his mind was made up going into Tribal Council. Tribal Council, as, like, most of those are. However, I think what it really goes to show, if anything, why Sarge is an impactful first juror is it really does go to show how you, and we talked about this with Kelly last week, right? Like, how you exit someone from the game is so important. I think Sarge, no matter when he gets voted out, will always be bitter against whoever he
I was just going to say, I out. Think Sarge is a bitter juror.
Yeah.
Oh, 100%.
100%. 100%. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think no matter where he goes in the boot order, he would be bitter.
Mm-hmm. You have to be. This is what's so tough about the game of Survivor is because you have to be lucky that you were not the one involved in Sarge's vote out, right? Like Chris wasn't really involved, but then you're not controlling your own destiny in the game. That means that you didn't control that vote, right? So it's like Twyla is controlling her path in the game, but is getting punished for it. And this is like the,
There's a potential here. So Merge Boot is Rory. If Rory is now the first member of the jury, I think Rory might be able to talk to Sarge a little bit. I know he wasn't on Sarge's like top tier because Rory was going fifth and Twyla was fourth or whatever. But Rory might be able to talk to Sarge and maybe talk out some of his, you know, frustrations with Twyla and say like, maybe Twyla did this. Like, I don't know. That's just some.
Maybe he could have
a possibility of
possibility, but I don't think there's any chance Rory was ever voting for a woman to win this season.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
I'm just speculating of what could happen.
What's also interesting is that this is almost the exact same situation as we just talked about with Lex, where it's like, hey, I did you a favor right before the merge, and you immediately repay me by stabbing me in the back.
Yeah,
they just watched this. So that for the same thing to happen again is really interesting to me. And it's the same result where you get a bitter first juror against you. And, you know, when you could have seen this coming, right? Like, it could have been good for Twyla's game to vote Sarge out. Like, obviously, she makes it to the final two. It's a good move for a game. Mm-hmm. But that comes at a cost, right? So whether she knew it or not that Sarge was going to be this bitter against her, you probably should have seen that coming. And then from there, if the decision is still the same, then it is what it is. But I don't know if she was able to see this coming.
So our next juror is Kobe. He is the first juror of Palau. And he votes for Katie. He's the only one to vote for Katie. And we're just going to skip right here and bitter juror to the max because he knows he is on the outs of Koror. And he also doesn't get a tribal council or like a scramble time to even be able to pitch any form of a case. They go right to tribal council after a temptation challenge. And he basically is trying to win over Stephanie somehow, but I don't know where he's trying to go because he doesn't have numbers. He doesn't have anywhere to swing a vote. He's just trying to expose everybody else. So Stephanie tries to gather numbers against someone, I think, is his strategy for this episode. And this is basically everybody just kind of talking to Stephanie. We have the issues with the boys wanting to go out fishing. They were going to split 2-2, but then Tom was like, no, us alpha boys are going to go on the boat. And Kobe's like, all right, I'm going to be forced to do bait. Got it. Even though I volunteered. So Kobe is a lot of a first juror. I see some of his sides, but then I do not see others. His sides, and he's an interesting one because I think he does respect the game, but at the same time he's bitter.
I think what's really important with Kobe in complete comparison to everyone else we've talked about today, Kobe is the head of the direct opposition to the winner of this season. Mm-hmm. Right, he is an antagonist in the season, despite the fact that, like, I love Kobe. Kobe's fantastic, and does love the game of Survivor. Like, Kobe's passion for Survivor is still around here in Palau, and like constantly still talking about Survivor on social media, like constantly. Yep. Probably one of like the biggest fans of the show who's ever been cast on the show, in all honesty. And he was in direct opposition to the person who was running the entire thing.
Yeah.
And this vote where Kobe goes home it seems kind of inconsequential what he's trying to orchestrate here by getting Stephanie on their side. Arguably, like, Greg and Jen are ready to flip, right? Like, Greg and Jen see the writing on the wall. They know they have to get rid of Tom at some point, and they have to start weakening him.
It's for sure. It's not evident, though, in this episode.
It's not, not in this episode. In, like, the Willard episode.
Yeah.
Is where, is where they... Right, but it's something that you forgot about by now.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, I'm only watching this one.
Greg and watching Jen are
locked. Yeah.
but the thing is, like, Greg and Jen are there. Kobe, if he survives this, could very well turn this, flip this season on its head. Like, again, this is, like, a very important vote in the entirety of the season here.
And if we can scramble around, do we think Kobe is able to pull anything?
I don't think so.
Too hard of a lock on everything. He has Ian, he has Stephanie, he has Katie.
Stephanie's too blinded at this point. She's not in desperation mode yet.
Yeah. Greg would probably be too scared, if I'm being honest. Because he's too scared at the final six. He's too scared to vote for Tom at the final six. He's not going to vote for him at the final nine. And I also think that Kobe, what day was he voted out? Probably day 20 something. So he had been working. That's right. He'd be in the finals. He had 24 days to work on this. Like, he had felt this way about Tom since the beginning. Like, that's what a lot of his content had been, is like feeling on the outside. He's not in the majority. He knows Tom is on top. He wants to go after Tom. So he couldn't do that in 24 days, right? He wasn't successful in pulling anybody on Karor over then. So I don't know what one scramble round would really change about that. So I don't think that would change much.
In his,
like, a mercy kill.
In his seriously. Tribal question, basically he... It's not really a question either. And he goes first. He sets the tone for this tribal council. And basically says to Katie, like, you did nothing in this game. You didn't participate in the challenges. You're just, like, not great. You rode coattails. I rarely saw you muster enough energy to stir coconut. And if I vote for you, it is not a vote for you. It is a vote against Tom. Like, do not get this twisted. I do not like you. Like, he's basically, like, harping on that. And then he goes over to Tom and states, like, you played this game dirty, almost as dirty as I would have liked to. But you, if you admit it or not, like, that's on you, but you did play, you know, a dirty game like Ian did, that you kind of reprimanded him for. This is your chance to see if, you know, my vote is worth it for you. So I'm going to sit down and watch the rest of Tribal Council. So he's basically saying, like, Katie, you got an uphill battle. And Tom, you really gotta, like, own that honor and integrity was not part of your game.
Yeah, this is, at least he admits it, though, right? He's a bitter juror and he knows it. And like I said, Lex was voting against Rob. Lex thinks that he, you know, whatever. Yeah. Kobe is aware that he is voting against Katie because he is a bitter juror. Like, I am a bitter juror. So yeah, I think his speech is like hilarious. Clearly, he would, like, who would have been his first choice to vote for in this entire merge? Like, Jen,
maybe.
I think
something like that.
Maybe even vote for Greg, but then he might say, like, Greg, you didn't turn when you needed to. Blah blah blah. But I don't know. I think. Kobe's speech here, I was impressed with it, and I forgot how good it was as one of those, like, knife twister kind of speeches. And it is beautiful because of the fact that he says, like, Katie, I'm gonna be flat out with you. This is not a vote for you.
It's bitter and dramatic, but it doesn't stray and it doesn't cross
He's
the line.
Honest,
like, and, it's you know, funny. And what's also great, Kobe sets a tone, but he sets his own tone because nobody else follows his thing in the entire season.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Because I think the bitterness from Kobe doesn't come out with the players. I think it's the fact that he doesn't get an opportunity to play the game.
Exactly.
Like, because he jumps down for donuts. Okay. The temptation challenge. He is the first person out of that game. Him and Janu.
Yeah, that's crazy as hell. But I know what you're talking about, John. Like,
because he didn't get to play the game, right? Because Oolong was so bad at the game, he didn't get to play Survivor. And like the only time he goes to Tribal Council is the very clear first boot. And this is a man who intentionally picks Karen over the person he is bonded with at the beginning of the season to ensure there's someone who goes home before him. And then she does the same thing with Willard, right? Like, Kobe is playing intelligently from the very start of this game. Despite the fact that he would probably have had a fantastic ally in Angie, he knew he was in danger if he didn't bring Karen over onto Karora right away. And it was Oolong consistently losing those immunity challenges, which took all agency from Kobe in the game. Kobe never got a chance to establish his footing because he didn't have to vote him out. In this game, when you're not voting people out, all of a sudden, provider becomes a way bigger role. And I think that is part of the reason why where Tom's success comes from is the fact that Oolong was just so bad.
There's no swap in this season. Yeah. And I've said, I think that's Tom's luckiest aspect.
There's no merge either.
There's no merge. Right. I mean, but I think Kobe at a swap would be dangerous.
100%.
Like, extremely dangerous. He would be flipping immediately. Like, he would bond, like you said, with Angie. I'm looking at, like, he would get along with on Oolong, but
I don't know. That Oolong tribe was like not the people you really want to associate with, but no, he could have. I think he would have figured it out
if him and James Miller got to meet on a beach.
You're right.
Hey, he had James Miller's respect,
exactly,
as a competitor,
but I think Kobe would be really interesting to see play again because I don't think if he winds up on another jury, even if he's the first juror, as long as he gets to play, I don't think he winds up like this. I think it's just he is a product of his season.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that is the thing is like, yes, he's bitter, but he's almost a better bitter juror because he isn't bitter towards the people. Right. And like, there is bitterness there, but it's bitterness like, I am upset at you because you didn't let me play the game.
Yeah.
And it's not like personal bitterness. It's just game related bitterness. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what makes him a better bitter juror. He's still very clearly bitter. I think like the interesting thought experiment with this season is like if Bobby John ends up on the jury instead.
Oh, yeah.
Like how does that change the season? Because Bobby John seems like the type of person who would just like advocate for Tom, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. He called him a man amongst men.
Yeah,
like he was all over Tom.
Yeah,
I think I cut out there for a second, but you know what I was saying.
Yeah.
Yes. What does that mean? Alrighty. Well, this has been another episode of Bitter or Better. We will be live next Wednesday at 8 p.m. Phil will be joining us. I knew he needed to be on so he could rip Parvati's game apart. So I asked him to join for this next set. No, he's in 2 weeks. I lied.
I was doing math there. I'm like, he's gonna rip her for the Cook Islands. Yeah. Okay.
Cook Islands.
No, I did my math earlier in the episode and
it's two. You're out. Yeah.
I see. It was that whole like an extinction math.
Exactly.
Sixes and ones from here on out.
Yes. So we will be live next Wednesday, not with Phil, but who knows who could show up. John, what else we got going on in the Specialist Universe?
Well, if you didn't hear enough about season 6 through 10 tonight, you have tomorrow where Phil and What's Upon an Island will be discussing the winning games of all of the winners from those seasons. If you didn't listen to last week's podcast, it was really great. So make sure you go back and listen to that if you haven't already. Tagwith is doing her China rewatch every week. That's kind of it for the Specialist right now. But
we got Patreon still cooking.
We do have Patreon stuff too. We do, and we do have winner ranking starting on June 30th. Will be our first episode of the winner rankings of the Specialist. I'm not sure exactly who's going to be doing that right there, but we all have to submit lists. So you'll get some influence from all of us.
If you need another perspective on players' legacies, Kyle, you just put out a video.
Yes, I did. About that very topic, player legacies after season 50. And that was a lot of fun. I'll also be doing a winner rankings at some point. That'll probably be in like a couple of months because it will take me a long time to to make. But yeah, if you wanted a different perspective, you can come there.
Alrighty. Yeah.
Matt Chat was the name of that channel.
Yeah.
It's linked below.
It's linked below.
You can find it. Linked. Awesome.
It's always linked. Alrighty, everyone. Well, we will see you next week with another episode of Bitter or Better. Goodbye.